Colonial Power, France.
Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune says French is war booty, in apparent reference to the country's war of independence, which was one of the longest and most brutal wars of decolonization. Well, for more on the move by Algeria to stop using French language, we have contacted Amour Chabi. He's a journalist and a political analyst and the managing editor of Atlas Times in Algiers. Thanks for your time, sir, today.
Thank you for accepting.
Now, the government of Algeria is set to replace French with English at Algerian universities. Now, what is the main reason behind this historic decision?
The French language in the university starting this academic year was not new in Algeria here because, there is many attempts to do this move, which regards as a continuation of the liberation struggle against French colonial rule. This move or this gesture or this this step, it's a big step forward to confront our liberation from the French era, French colonial era, and it's to be more integrated in the Algeria, seek to be integrated in the world, and not just to be tied to the former colonial power.
One relic of the French colonial era that continues to significantly affect life in many African countries is the use of French. Many people feel that by stopping the use of French, they are breaking free from France's colonial legacy.
C'est un plaisir باش نولوا نهضروا لغه العلم اللي هي لونغلي لا لونغ فيفونت كيما يقولوا لها بريمير دي شوز نخرجوا من الفرنسيه اللي فيها تعقيدات اداريه وما مد حتى ثمار نخرج من لغه الاستعمار ونزيد ندخل في اللغه هي اللغه المتداوله عالميا.
The latest move by Algeria to drop the use of French language only represents a fraction of an acceleration of a process that has already been underway for some time across Africa. Experts believe that the phasing out of French in Algeria will negatively impact skilled manpower in France.
That France has now around 15,000 medicine doctors from Algeria that are in France now. Medicine in Algeria is taught in France, in French, in the French language. So when we change this the manner to teach medicine in Algerian university, certainly France will lose a big potential of human resources. And we can see that Algeria give still some 60 years on after independence, still give France its potential, its human resources, its potential, its knowledge.
Algeria's shift away from the weakened Francophone world also comes amid political tensions between Algiers and Paris. French President Emmanuel Macron has been quoted denying the existence of an Algerian nation before the French invasion of Algeria in 1830. Now, these outrageous remarks angered many Algerians who now say they are sick of French. Well, now, how did the disparaging remarks by President Macron influence the current decision to dump French language in Algeria?
Because before the French came, Algeria was seen, was known, was recognized as a nation, as a big nation. We have a long history that goes for thousands of years before that. We have diplomatic relation with the great powers from England to the United States to the along our history. And when the French president expressed said this phrase or this sentence, it goes against all attempts to go forward or to put a relation between people. And this reflection and others are giving Algerians the sentiment that French is not, after all, ready to put its history, its bloody history, and its bad history in Algeria behind it.
During French colonial rule, Arabic was banned at primary schools. And after independence, the Algerian state reversed the situation. Algeria's decision to introduce English from primary school age is significant and is seen as part of a deliberate plan of internationalization and the country's future. However, experts say the transition should not be rushed.
Now, Algeria is replacing French with English. Do you think it would have been much better if Arabic was used as the main language of instruction in universities across Algeria?
General culture that's opened in the on the world. We said that we replace because there is some fields of science and some technological and fields are not. We can't teach it or study it in Arabic only, such as medicine or technology or computer sciences or anything. And we have to choose, and we choose to learn it and study it in English. There is here in Algeria, we see many places, even the official place in the front of the institution are written both in Arabic and in English.
Algeria is not a member of the French-led International Organization of La Francophonie because it withdrew its membership. This is despite the fact that Algeria is the world's second largest French-speaking country in terms of a speaker population. The writing was clearly on the wall that French influence is unwanted in Algeria.
Language, we have not a problem with the language itself, as I can say. We have a problem with the French authorities and French political system that use this English and the Francophonie system. Algeria has quit the organization, the Francophonie organization, for several years because we see that this Francophonie organization is not just a cultural or an organization that gives culture or participate to give education to other people. It's used as a political arm against the population and to maintain the domination, French domination, on its former colonies, especially across Africa.
We have seen a rapid increase in anti-French sentiments in Sahelian and North African countries. Protesters in Niger say France is the root of all misfortunes in Africa. Now, is the decision by Algeria to dump a French an indicator of a decline of the cultural influence of France in its former colonies across Africa? And in other words, are we witnessing an end of Francafrique?
France has exploited this influence through the exploiting also the minerals and the natural resources of these countries in the Sahel region. And these population are pushed into the poverty and to a dire situation. And then for so many years, we see that this French presence was not welcomed. It is not seen as good things by these population, with the penetration of the social media and people gained and have a new conscience and they are putting a question, asking themselves what France is doing here in our countries, how France is managing our destiny after decades of so-called independence.
Well, there you have it. African countries formerly colonized by France want total emancipation, and masses are continuing the march to full independence from Paris. Well, and that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. Goodbye for now.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Limelight.
Apparently, the days of US dollar hegemony are numbered as multiple states have adopted alternative currencies in international transactions in a bid to minimize or eliminate the influence of the greenback. The share of US dollar reserves held by central banks fell to 59%, its lowest level in 25 years, during the fourth quarter of 2020, according to the International Monetary Fund. The data shows the declining role of the American currency in the global economy. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times noted Russia is seeking to settle trade with ASEAN countries in their local currencies in a bid to boost bilateral trade, according to media reports, signaling the latest de-dollarization effort by Moscow as it faces sweeping Western sanctions over the Ukraine crisis. Russia's efforts come as many other emerging market economies, including China, India, and ASEAN, are moving to use local currencies to settle trade amid chaos in the global payment system created by US-led Western sanctions. The de-dollarization trend is conducive for China's foreign trade, as well as the yuan's internationalization, analysts said. While attending the ASEAN Regional Forum in Jakarta, Indonesia, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov suggested settling trade between Russia and ASEAN with their national currencies, the Nikkei Asia reported recently. The practical cooperation interests between Russia and ASEAN countries, including Indonesia, will be answered with the launch of consultations on the use of national currencies in mutual settlements, Lavrov said in an interview with Indonesian newspaper Kompas recently. This is all part of Russia's de-dollarization effort, which is actually good for Russia, ASEAN and other countries, amid the increased weaponization of the dollar by the U.S., according to Song Qiu, president of the Contemporary China-Russia Regional Economy Research Institute. Song said both the yuan and ruble have been used mostly in China-Russia trade, especially for energy, which helped boost growth in bilateral trade. China's trade with Russia surged 50.9% year-on-year to about 791.43 billion yuan in the first half of year, with China's exports to Russia jumping 91.7% and imports from Russia up 28%, according to Chinese customs data recently.
Despite the U.S.-led West sanctions against Russia and baseless accusations against China's normal trade ties with Russia, China and Russia are aiming to lift bilateral trade to $200 billion by the end of 2023. Bilateral trade activities are picking up. For example, the 7th China-Russia Expo held in Yekaterinburg, Russia, from July 11th to 13th. More than 300 Chinese enterprises attended the event, which was largest scale so far. Xu Jiuting, a spokesperson for the Chinese Commerce Ministry, said recently, adding, Chinese and Russian enterprises had comprehensive communications and exchanges on cooperation in areas such as energy, agriculture, forestry, industry, transportation, and people-to-people exchanges and culture. The U.S. cannot stop normal cooperation among countries because such cooperation benefits the peoples of the countries. The ill-intended U.S. attempts to undermine normal economic and trade cooperation among countries will hurt its own interest, Sung noted. Many countries have switched to the yuan for trade. For example, Indian refiners have begun paying for some oil imports from Russia that way. In Latin America, Argentina began to use the yuan to settle part of its debt with the IMF for the first time on June 30. According to Press TV, Iran and Indonesia have agreed to use their local currencies in bilateral trade amid a spreading trend of de-dollarization in countries across the globe, wary of the negative impact of the greenback's fluctuations. According to a senior Indian government official cited by U.S. financial media, Delhi and Jakarta plan to settle bilateral transactions in local currencies. The two heavily populated countries also plan to link up their fast payment systems. The agreements take place as India signed a similar pact with the United Arab Emirates recently, which will see more trades done in the national currencies of the two countries, rupees and dirhams. According to the anonymous Indian source, Delhi and Jakarta are planning to ease trade by sparing cross-border fund transfers in local currencies and linking up their fast payment systems to one another. The anonymous source added that Indian Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman and her Indonesian counterpart Sri Mulyani had reviewed the proposals for the bilateral trade pact, which had been completed. The source added that the pact had reached its advanced stage and an announcement could be made once officials from the two sides get done with the formalities of the pact. The planned pact with Indonesia come as India inked a similar agreement with Bangladesh earlier this year. The recent moves are part of the world country's de-dollarization efforts, trying to rid their dependency on the greenback and seek out and utilize other currency options. Last month, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said Washington should expect a decline in the dollar share of the global reserve. Yellen even admitted that the global de-dollarization move was gaining pace, describing the spreading trend as a natural desire to diversify. Experts, however, see the weaponization of the U.S. dollar and Washington's insistence on imposing sanctions on perceived adversaries as factors that have led world countries to be wary of utilizing the greenback in their financial transactions and seek new means and solutions for doing international trade. temperature.
Situated in a relatively remote desert at the Negev Nuclear Research Center, the Dimona reactor is a heavy water-moderated natural uranium-fueled reactor. Most independent analysts believe that in the mid-1970s, Israel upgraded the installation to generate between 70 and 150 megawatts. Now that output makes it not only the region's largest reactor, but the sole evident producer of plutonium and tritium for nuclear weapons. And although Israel neither confirms nor denies its atomic arsenal, experts believe that it's been a nuclear-armed regime now for several decades. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. While the Zionist regime of Israel has maintained its decades-long policy of deliberate ambiguity about its weapons of mass destruction, its deadly arsenal is not the only danger threatening lives. The very existence of the Dimona is a terror haunting Jordan and Israel's other neighboring countries. A higher rate of cancer and the constant fear of possible malfunctions at the reactor are some of the worries that locals must deal with on a daily basis. And the Israelis are aware of the possibility of a meltdown at the Dimona reactor, a meltdown that would affect an area reaching Cyprus and the entire neighboring region. What makes these concerns even more pressing are satellite images of the Dimona reactor. Its walls have cracks which could cut its life by half. Join us this week's documentary exploring the threats that Dimona is posing on its neighbors.
Let's talk about Dimona. Many people say, well, nobody knows.
You see, I blush, you say Dimona and I blush. We're not supposed to talk about Dimona. But
why?
Go ahead. Because it's a taboo. It's a taboo, it's a secret.
Negev Desert, south of Israel. This mysterious complex, away from the public eye, employs thousands of people, all sworn to secrecy. When its existence was discovered, Israel said it was a textile factory, never admitting its true purpose, making plutonium for atomic bombs. We need answers. We go to meet one of the few people in Israel that knows what is going on inside Dimona.
We are dealing with disarmament of weapons of mass destruction, meaning nuclear, chemical, and biological. We're the only NGO dealing with this right now in Israel. When you believe that these are the weapons that keeps you safe, when this is the common belief, then the question raised, are we the next country to use them? Israel is a nuclear armed state, chemical armed state, and biological armed state. Nuclear weapon is not a weapon that aimed at an army. It's a weapon that destroys a city. Are we willing to destroy any city in the Middle East? Mothers, children, fathers, citizens, not soldiers.
Want to know more about the most secretive nuclear program in the world?
Just transmitted at the request of the.
Is the Israeli nuclear plant at Dimona poisoning and threatening the lives of millions throughout the Middle East? From Tel Aviv, we go south. Our destination, Dimona. Approaching a nuclear plant is a high risk. The highway splices through the heat and sand of the Negev Desert. Barbed wire fence edges the road. Signs posted every few hundred meters warn drivers not to stop their vehicles under any circumstances.
They have cameras, they will see.
This is a military zone.
They said don't go off the road. Military zone, no photography.
Finally, we can have a distant look at one of the world's most secret facilities. An exclusive view of a secret Israel is hiding since the 1960s. Dimona Nuclear Plant.
That's the gate. Go inside.
Only a few people in the world can say they know each corner of Dimona Nuclear Plant. All of them are sworn to secrecy. But there is someone that knows exactly how the building looks like.
It was a secret competition with the design of the civic center of a new atomic research center that was to be built in Dimona, in the south part of Israel. For security reasons, we couldn't call it a big center of research, what it was called, a civic center in the Negev. In the 60s, it wasn't such big news to have a textile factory in Dimona. So if you built something large in Dimona, you could very easily say, you see, this is a textile factory. Only that this textile factory had a dome and very... wasn't typical of textile things, but it wasn't seen from the road. It was kind of an agreed quietness. I have the photograph. While the project was being built, not when it was occupied. Then at that time, the security eye was not that strong. So I took the photographs. Later, many years afterwards, I all of a sudden got several photos from an unknown source, but with a stamp of the censorship. So I understood that somebody from the site sent me photos that were taken there. There's a sign that I can open my small portfolio and make it public. The courtyard of the main building, from the other side, looking towards the entrance. The detail of the stairs leading from the to the roof. You can have a roof cover. You can go up to the roof undercover. There's a kind of...
This message is transmitted at the request of the United States
when
Office
President
of
Kennedy
Defense.
Took office, he knew from a CIA secret report that Israel was developing a nuclear program in the Negev. Beginning of January 1961, Kennedy met the Israeli ambassador in Washington and expressed that the USA wanted to inspect Dimona to be sure about its purposes. Israel accepted, but under one condition, if it was done on a secret basis. For 5 months, the visit of the American inspectors to Dimona nuclear plant was postponed several times by Israel. Finally, an ultimatum from USA was accepted. Two American scientists were allowed to visit Dimona in May 1961. Israel imposed several rules on the American inspectors. They were not allowed to take any pictures or issue any comments about Dimona. When the inspectors finally entered the plant, they were misled. They were shown a fake control room on the ground floor. 12th of January 1961, the aim of the building built in the Negev was clear. In a high-level meeting between President Eisenhower and his staff, the U.S. Secretary of Defense informs the president that based on intelligence findings, Israel was lying and Dimona was not for peaceful purposes. They were unaware of the six floors below where the plutonium was made. In search of answers, we travelled to Berlin in Germany. Here we are going to meet Xanthe Hall. She is an expert in nuclear weapons and the director of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Xanthe Hall is also the coordinator of the European Parliament Commission Against Nuclear Proliferation.
The Israel Atomic Energy Commission is one of the most secret institutions in the world. It's responsible for Dimona, its chairman is Netanyahu, but it's not even officially recognized as existing. All the other nuclear plants in the world are monitored by the Atomic Energy Agency, but not the ones in Israel. So we think it's about time that Dimona was also monitored. The one thing that needs to happen is that an independent body like the IAEA would go into Dimona and find out what is going on there, what is the state of the substance of the building, is the containment of the nuclear reactor still intact, what are they doing about cooling, where is the nuclear waste being stored, how is it being stored, and all these questions, they need to be answered. We need some transparency.
Israel has not ratified the Non-Proliferation Treaty, a way of avoiding inspections to its nuclear sites.
First of all, we are not obliged. We are not part of the treaties. We never signed the treaties, so we don't oblige. We never said we won't. That's one thing. Second thing is the US. And the third thing is the Holocaust.
How?
Guilt. Do you see Germany? Germany sold us the submarines. The US, they let us steal uranium. You go to the UN, to the NPT, to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and you hear the US delegation reading their statements, and when they talk about Israel, you see paragraphs that you know from the language was written by Israelis.
So Israel has a special treatment?
Yes, we're a special case.
Yoshi Melman is known as an investigative journalist, specialized in intelligence and strategic affairs. He was described by WikiLeaks as an information mule who has exchanged tips with the Mossad. But in 2009, Melman uncovered a terrible secret about Dimona. Workers at the nuclear reactor facility were made to volunteer to drink uranium in 1998 as part of an experiment.
The workers themselves already cannot say anything. They have so many contracts saying that they cannot say. The question is the family. So usually in order for them to get compensation, the families also have to say they will not sue, they will not say, they will not speak to the media, and so on. So we know only when they have settlements, when the courts say settlement, that they give some money, but we don't know how much usually, and we don't know how many, and we don't know what conditions. And also their doctors are only doctors that work with the commission.
I mean, if you only have a nuclear reactor that is making energy like Chernobyl or Fukushima, that's just one thing. You have lots of possibilities for accidents, but if you've got added to that, you've got uranium enrichment, you've got plutonium reprocessing, and you have actually the making of the warheads, then you have, you know, many more possibilities. Have there already been accidents? There's been some rumors and speculation that in 1966 there was a criticality accident at Dimona. We don't know what's been happening in that plant, and actually it seems that there's probably more secrecy than there was in the Soviet Union, because quite quickly after the Chernobyl accident it was actually said that there had been the accident. So I think Israel is more better to compare on the level of secrecy about a nuclear program with perhaps North Korea, because we know nothing about their program either. We do know that they have one, and at least North Korea is making claims that it has nuclear weapons, whereas Israel is pretending that it doesn't. So I'm not trying to say that there will be worse or better, but there are many more possibilities, so the risk is definitely higher.
Our next stop in search of answers about the Israeli nuclear program and its secrets is a Palestinian village. Dahria, very close to Dimona, and a military field where Israel might be burying nuclear waste from Dimona. In Dahria, a Palestinian doctor struggles to keep Dimona's victims alive. Cesium is not present in nature and can only be found in areas where a nuclear disaster or test takes place.
We know how cesium works on the body because of Chernobyl and Fukushima. Both of those accidents showed us a lot of about how cesium actually affects human health, and that there are claims that there has been a study that has found cesium in the region, and cesium is an indication that something has happened with a nuclear activity. It most likely would be, depending on the amount of it, would be from a nuclear accident, or it could be from leaking radioactive waste.
In some areas of Palestine, the presence of cesium is at the same levels as in Chernobyl or Fukushima, places where the worst nuclear accidents took place.
It's a radioactive isotope. It has a half-life of 30.2 years, and it acts like potassium or like salt. It's water soluble, so it can spread very quickly through the body, and it tends to concentrate then in muscle tissue, and you also have muscles in certain organs like heart and stomach and intestines, so that's where often cesium will end up, and at that point it starts then to mutate the cells within those muscles, and you end up with cancer of the colon, cancer of the stomach, of the lungs sometimes, and it can lead to heart disruption.
There are many rumors about where they bury the waste, but my, and not just my, estimations are that all the materials are buried in the area surrounding the reactor, and the reason is that these materials are secret. They don't want people to go and take land samples or go with Geiger.
The Geiger counter is an electronic device that measures the level of radioactivity. These devices are allowed for use everywhere in the world. It is sold everywhere, even online, but not in Israel. Despite claiming to be democratic, Israelis cannot buy a Geiger counter inside Israel.
One of the major problems that we have, again, it goes back to the secrecy problem, is that we can't even measure the amount of radiation in the area, because that's not allowed. And the Israeli law even says that if you take a Geiger counter into the area around Dimona and measure the radioactivity, you could be then sentenced to 15 years in prison. So nobody's going to do that. I know people even thought about doing it, but they didn't. It's certainly very risky to try to do any research on this at all, which is why number one problem is to get rid of the secrecy.
What is the security of Israel, and why the security of Israel is so different than the security of the people that live in Israel. And we hear rumors about buildings where the levels of cancer is unbelievable. And when we wanted to ask doctors, we also didn't get any answers. And one funny or sad answer we got was that we cannot measure the amount of cancer, radiation-related cancer in Israel, because we had so many people coming from Chernobyl, from Kiev, and that changed the numbers. So that was one answer we got. And of course, this is not a serious answer. People in Dimona are not rich, most of them. This is, if they were rich people, they wouldn't live next to a reactor, I guess. They wouldn't be depending on this reactor for their livelihood. A few years ago, they all got iodine pills that were very old iodine pills, and that was it. And they're not asking, and that's the problem, that they are more afraid to talk about it than the radiation.
But there are more cases around Palestine. In a small village lost in Al-Khalil Hills, there are other victims. One of them has already died. His son fears the consequences of telling his father's story and only accepts to talk if we protect his identity. This and many other cases come from the same region.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The August 2023 BRICS summit in South Africa unfolds against a backdrop of an attempt by the Western media to project it as a divided club. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to the website of VION, Morocco has officially submitted its bid to join the BRICS grouping, or Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. This comes ahead of next week's much-anticipated summit in South Africa. With this, the Kingdom of Morocco joins other nations like Iran, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, and Egypt, which are also vying for a spot in the economic alliance. The upcoming summit in South Africa will bring together around 60 heads of state and will set expansionary standards for possible new BRICS members. However, as per CoinGabe, the final decision on which countries will join the grouping will probably be deferred. Talking to Bloomberg, South Africa's BRICS ambassador Anil Suklal clarified that the upcoming summit's focus will be on promoting local currencies within the bloc. Suklal said trading in local currencies is clearly on the agenda. He added that there is no de-dollarization agenda item on the BRICS agenda. He said that contrary to some narratives making the rounds, the bloc is not a counter to the West or G7. Instead, he said the alliance aims to advance the agenda of the Global South and build a more inclusive, representative, just and fair global architecture. According to South Africa's top diplomat in charge of relations with the bloc, more than 40 countries have expressed interest in joining the BRICS group of nations. Nations that express interest include Iran, Argentina, Algeria, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Cuba, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Comoros, Gabon, and Kazakhstan. Previously in July, Algeria applied for a spot in the bloc and also submitted a request to become a shareholder member of the BRICS Bank. The North African nation, as per a Reuters report, seeks to join the Economic Alliance to open up new economic opportunities. Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune, as quoted by Nahar TV, said, "We officially applied to join the BRICS group. We sent a letter asking to be shareholder member in the bank. Algeria's first contribution in the bank will be $1.5 billion. Reuters reports that the nation, which is rich in oil and gas reserves, is seeking to diversify its economy and also strengthen its partnership with countries like China. BRICS, which comprises Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, accounts for more than 40% of the world's population and about 26% of the global economy. Middle East Monitor also noted, 8 Arab countries have officially applied to join the BRICS group of fast-developing economies, the South African foreign minister said. Naledi Pandor told reporters that a total of 23 countries have officially applied to join the group, including 8 Arab countries, noting that BRICS leaders will discuss expanding the group and the submitted applications during their upcoming summit between August 22nd to 24th. Pandor said South Africa, as chairman of BRICS, will hold talks at the summit on the enlargement model, its principles and standards. We are gradually moving towards consensus on BRICS expansion issues, and we hope to reach it at the summit. Algeria, Bahrain, Egypt, Kuwait, Morocco, Palestine, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE were named as the countries that applied. The remaining countries are Iran, Kazakhstan, Nigeria, Bangladesh, Senegal, Ethiopia, Belarus, Bolivia, Argentina, Venezuela, Vietnam, Cuba, Honduras, Indonesia, and Thailand. According to Daily News Egypt, the 15th BRICS summit, to be held in South Africa this month, is expected to make the global governance system fairer and counterbalance the dominance of Western countries. Carlos Maria Corroa, executive director of the South Center, told Xinhua news agency recently. The event's agenda will be topped by efforts toward de-dollarization, reducing the U.S. dollar's hegemony, and the expansion of the bloc, Korea said. The BRICS group of major emerging economies, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, will hold its 15th Heads of State and Government Summit in Johannesburg between August 22nd to August 24th. The summit will be the first in-person BRICS gathering since the COVID-19 pandemic. Altogether, the BRICS nations account for more than 40% of the world's population and about 26% of the global economy. Korea said one key issue for the BRICS to consider is global governance. There is a need to change the current system, which is unfair and asymmetric. In particular, the architecture of the financial system needs a major reform. Leaders are also expected to discuss the group's expansion by adding new members, including the admission criteria and the guiding principles. Korea said, "Among my hopes is that the current BRICS group considers the incorporation of other currencies. This will be very important because it will give volume to the BRICS group." Of course, major economies such as those of India, Brazil, and China are there. But if other countries can also be incorporated, the political dimension of the BRICS will be improved significantly.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on June 11, 2023, in a meeting with a number of scientists, specialists, experts, and officials of Iran's nuclear industry. The next issue is the issue of 20,000 megawatts that I have spoke of a few years ago. Take this issue seriously. Assume that, for example, we are using about 1,000 megawatts of nuclear energy now, and there is a plan to increase this. However, the goal should be set at 20,000 megawatts. From approximately 80 to 90,000 megawatts, which let's say the country will need in the future over the medium term, 20,000 megawatts must be from nuclear energy, which is financially, biologically, and environmentally efficient. Follow this up seriously and plan for this. As I have written down here and have communicated this to friends in the exhibition, work should be done on low power and low capacity power plants. Now, work has been already done on the technology for power plants with a capacity of more than 1,000 megawatts and experience has been gained. But this experience can also be applied to low-capacity power plants, which I have heard are common in the world today.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Other countries are mostly working on low capacity power plants, 200 megawatts plants, 100, and even less than 100. 3 or 4 years ago, I asked about this from the head of one of these countries that has this technology. I said that they have a 30 megawatt power plant and for them to give it to us. He said, we don't have it. I said, yes, I have a report that you do. Their minister was sitting there. He asked him and the minister answered something. I realized that they acknowledged that they have this, but they didn't give it to us anyway. I mean, it was difficult for them. We need these low power, low capacity power plants for different sectors. Follow up on this. My next recommendation is with regard to the issue of our human resources. Human resources are very important. There are very few students studying in this field, nuclear science, now. I don't want to mention a number, but we must have at least 10 times as many students in this field. There are certain reasons for this. Well, it is difficult. It has its own difficulties and problems. These difficulties must be compensated for.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. You've done for me through all my years.
option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Tehran has hosted a conference to discuss the effects of sanctions on the health of patients. Speaking at the event, Secretary of the Strategic Council of Foreign Relations Abbas Araghchi rejected the U.S. claims that medicine and food items are exempted from sanctions.
There might be such a thing on the surface, but in practice, the actions taken by the U.S. administration have imposed a strong sanction in this area. The U.S. sanctions against Iran cover a very wide network, and in addition to the humanitarian exceptions that they have apparently placed in the field of medicine, there are very detailed conditions by the Office of Foreign Assets Control of the U.S. Treasury Department in a way that makes their implementation practically impossible for pharmaceutical companies.
Many human rights groups have criticized the U.S. for cutting off banking ties with Iran through threatening the international banks with punitive fines by the U.S. Department of Treasury, which has led to a disruption in the accessibility of vital medical supplies for Iranian patients.
The most important report in this matter was submitted to the UN Human Rights Council last year by Mrs. Duhan, the special rapporteur on unilateral coercive measures of the United Nations. The U.S. and the West, self-proclaimed advocates of human rights, were against this reporter and even voted against the resolution to extend her mission. Even during her report presentation in September last year, they chose not to be present in the meeting hall. Self-criticism is not within their tolerance.
Although the U.S. claims that the sanctions do not directly ban the sales of medicines to Iran, they block every financial route needed to obtain drugs for patients suffering from diseases such as diabetes, kidney failure, hemophilia, multiple sclerosis, thalassemia, and leukemia.
Iranian officials have repeatedly condemned the sanctions against the Iranian nation as a crime against humanity, saying such unilateral restrictive measures have put the lives of vulnerable people at risk by hampering their access to medicine. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has vowed to address the pressing cost of living crisis plaguing the nation. Attributing the situation to the global economic downturn, Erdogan has assured that his government will swiftly resolve this issue while upholding his promises to the people impacted by the devastating Fethiye earthquake. He had previously pledged to complete the reconstruction efforts within a year.
We vow to tackle the escalation.